From the racetracks around Australia, here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport.
We're Peter Norton. We have got an action-packed show for you tonight.
Yes, chock-a-block, really. We've got V8s from Western Australia. We've got previews for Formula 1. Look at Formula 3000 results. It's absolutely a bumper program.
And also, we have a look at the car FedEx Champ Car Series lip service to that. IRL, the real race series, we take a look at. Another NASCAR garage pass. And also the V8s and the trucks that were up at Queensland Raceway that make up the power tour. But first, stand by for news. Starting us off will be the V8s at Barbagallo Raceway. On the line, joining us is third place runner, Greg Murphy. Congratulations, Greg, on what turned out to be a great day in the office.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, it was. Turned out to be a really good day and a tough one at that. It was pretty competitive. The setup on the car and everything was pretty crucial this weekend, and everyone was having a bit of a struggle with it. But we got through, and third on the podium is bloody fantastic.
And on a real racetrack, it seems as though it was more difficult to pass at the pointy end there compared to a street circuit like Canberra a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think probably just as I was saying before, getting the setup right was the key, and everyone was sort of struggling with it this weekend, so the gaps were probably a little bit bigger than what they usually are. Just trying to get the rear tyres on all the cars to last the distance and finish the race. So everyone was having a bit of a struggle, but we got through, and it was Paul Radisson won the day, and quite convincingly as well. So he did a good job.
And can you explain for us, what is the peculiar nature of the track there that makes tyre wear such a problem?
The surface it looks very abrasive, and in the past it has been very abrasive. But over the years, with the amount of sand that is around the circuit, the abrasiveness and the sharp edges on all the stones and the seal has actually worn away. So all the rocks and everything are actually smoothed right over now, and they're nowhere near as sharp as what they used to be. And it's created quite a smooth, slippery surface, and the cars are struggling to get grip on that type of surface. So, you know, we dealt with it, and everyone had to do their best, and it turned out.
And, of course, your Kmart Racing Team Commodore came to grips with it pretty well with, I think it was a couple of fourth places and then a third in the final race.
Yeah, we were fifth in the race yesterday, and we got a fourth and a third today, and so that was a really good result. And unfortunately, Ross Lingle got given a stop-go penalty from jumping a start in the last race. So he dropped out of the running, which made it a little bit easier for me.
Yeah, you say unfortunately, but I guess you were really benefited from that little indiscretion from Russell.
Yeah, no, that's right. But I've had it done to me as well, so I know what it feels like. But it was still a tough day, and Mark's go finished second for HRT and tried to put the pressure on Paul, but towards the end there, but just couldn't do it. So we're pretty pleased to be on the podium.
And of course, we had one Ford way out in front, but the rest were mostly Commodores. So it really does prove that the Commodores really are there very strong still.
Yeah, well, listen, I think the difference between the marks at the moment is very little, and, you know, some places one works better than the other and vice versa, but, you know, we've got a very competitive championship, and both the Ford and the Commodore are performing really, really evenly, and I think we've really got the parity sorted, and it's really close, and that's what people want to see, close racing.
Now that we're almost at the halfway point of the season, have you had a time to sit back and just go, man, how my life has changed in the last, 6.5 months.
Yeah, absolutely, and it certainly has, and I do get reminded of it constantly, and I think of it all the time, and I'm actually driving along as we speak with Steve Richards, who's, you know, at FTR, and we were teammates last year, and things have changed for both of us considerably, and, you know, we're both very happy with the way things are going, and, you know, we're just in there and trying to be as competitive as possible, but as I said, it's a real tough championship, and to be probably in better situations than what we were last year is sort of paying off.
Now, of course, in the three race sprint format, there wasn't a whole lot of passing at the pointy end of the field. Do you think that endorses the new format for most of the races this year, being longer distance, pit stops and everything like that?
Well, it's probably not quite indicative of the way things usually work, because, as I was saying, it was very difficult today to get the cars set up, and it probably helped the situation that it was so hard for everyone to get their cars working. So I think we've got the next sprint race is 3 weeks away in Calder, and I think we'll probably see a little bit of different racing there, although it is quite hard to pass there as well. So we'll just see. Some of the circuits that we raced at with the endurance style races have proved to be fantastic sprint race formats before, but it'd also be good to hear what the public think, you know, vote with their opinions and see what they say, if they prefer the sprint or the endurance racing.
That might be something popping up on something like V8X's forums very soon.
Probably right.
Yeah, but you said you're driving back with Stephen Richards. Do you have a chat to him and say, man, I just could not get any grip, you know, at this part of the track? And does he turn to you and say, well, the Falcon was, you know, hopeless at this part?
No, I think everyone was struggling for similar sort of things. So, yeah, just had to be so very, very careful. And by the looks of it, you know, most guys were using up their rear tyres and just having to drive very, very carefully. And as someone said, it's like comparable to driving F, really, to tell the truth.
Mm. Well, Greg, congratulations on your run today, and we do wish you all the best. Have a safe trip back, and I guess everyone will see you out there at round number 7 of the Shell Championship Series at Calder Park Raceway.
Thanks a lot, mate. Cheers.
Greg Murphy joining us there on the line, as you heard, driving back from Barbagillo. And, of course, Peter, you speak to Andrew Clark a little bit later on in more detail. Also to the race winner, Paul Radisich, Craig Lowndes and Jason Bright.
Yes, later in the program we have our normal package piece that we do in conjunction with V8X magazine, and Andrew Clark was our man at the track this weekend, and we have a good chat about who did well, who struggled, and some of the dramas there, so stay tuned for that one later in the program.
All right, now, since you are our American motorsport correspondent, or used to be, what about this kart FedEx series? Two more races. Didn't I tell you this? At least I told you about one of these races that are muted to be axed, and, well, that one's going to be picked up by the IRL.
Yes, the kart championship, it is a great championship, but it is falling on hard times. They haven't been able to crack the commercial success in their home market, and, well, quite frankly, it is a series that's dominated by Brazilians. So
I was about to say, even Spider-Man can't save them.
Yes, that's right. We finally have a bit of a character there climbing the safety fences there when he wins, which is quite entertaining. It's hard to get excited by it. They're having cancelled a few races because of various problems at the beginning of the year. They're starting to bicker about some of the engine rules. And, of course, here we can't see it live because of time zones and TV people running it sort of Monday nights. Yeah, it's hard to get excited, unfortunately. One race that I will tune in for, which I will always enjoy, is seeing them racing at Michigan. Three wide and at those crazy speeds. That's one not to miss, though.
And it will be their last one this year.
Okay.
It has been officially... Speedways International Corporation, which of course is the Bill France-owned organisation which run NASCAR, have said that the contract ends with CART at the end of this race, and the options will not be taken up. And in fact, the options have been offered to the IRL, who said, yeah, we'll take that little US 500 that you tried to run up against our Indianapolis race.
Yes, Craig, you've been the prophet of doom about CART for since the mid-1990s, and okay, it's taken an awful long time, but piece by piece your prophecy is falling into place. And yes, I think we can expect the CART series to concentrate more and more on road circuits, and the IRL will become the dominant force in the super ovals. So yeah, okay, Craig, you win this one, but it took a while.
All right, but at Detroit, one of those super fantastic road circuits that they built on the Belle Isle.
Yes, a facility that's looking rather second-hand. They spruced it up a little bit a couple of years ago, which gave it a slightly longer life. And unfortunately, it's looking as though it's in trouble as well. They're talking now about whether they go to a very small oval track on the state fairgrounds. But that remains to be seen what happens there.
And it's a good track too.
Okay.
I've been there. It would be a more exciting race.
Okay, well, the prophet has made another prediction there. But at Detroit, I mean, it's the home of Ford, so I think corporately CART will have to have a presence there going forward. And as Craig said, Spider-Man is the star of the moment.
All right, during the week, a lot of newspaper articles in the Daily Telegraph have been written about our friends at Toyota. Oh, what a feeling, V8 franchise.
Yes, we're still waiting for any confirmation of that one. The guys at Neil Bates Automotive are still being rather coy about what their future holds. One thing for sure is that the facilities they have out there are truly world class, and whatever their future holds, they're going to attack it with quite a lot of vigour and professionalism, whether they stay with Toyota in rallying, whether Toyota follows them and kicks off a V8 program, or whatever Neil chooses to do. They've got definitely the driving skills and engineering skills to do anything in V8, whether it would be Ford, Holden, or Toyota. But the Toyota one's quite interesting. It's a really quite an exciting prospect. And we have to bear in mind, a couple of months ago, I think it was an interview that was published in one of the trade magazines with Tony Cochran, saying, well, he's not actually bending over backwards to get Toyota into it. In his eyes, the contest really is Ford and Holden. But I think he would still welcome them if they chose to come, but it would very much be on his terms. I don't think there'll be any concessions for Toyota. And in particular, the engine is the question. Internationally, Toyota have a very strong, I think it's a double overhead cam V8, which is technically superior to the Ford and Holden rules that are running at the moment. So they'd have to try to achieve some parity there, and that will be the challenge to get Toyota into the V8.
Talk is an American pushrod engine is being purchased by Toyota.
Well, that would probably be the answer then. Parity, as we heard a few minutes ago from Murph, is that they think they've got parity about right. So we'd hate to see Toyota come in and do a Godzilla type of style, two cars that are particularly dominant because the rules for the moment allow it. I think they'll tread very carefully allowing Toyota in. I think most of the guys there would be happy seeing them sort of mid-20s, that type of spot on the grid. That's where they would allow Toyota to come in. But Neil won't stand for that. He would want to get up there at the pointy end.
An interesting other thought is John Faulkner. How many times did he win Bathurst in a Toyota?
Yes, in the classes, he was very strong there for many years.
And Neil Bates won at least three.
Yes, that's right. So he would still be one of their preferred guys. Whether he's the golden child that he was back then, well, it remains to be seen, whereas Neil has kept the Toyota links very very strong there for quite a long time. And one name that hasn't been mentioned, but I might throw it in here, is, of course, Wayne Gardner. He's driving for Toyota in the Japanese GT series. So he's a name that is friendly with the big boys at Toyota. He could be that second car.
Well, all this and more can be discussed at length, but when we come back after the break, we do have some other issues to attend to. We speak with Mark Webber after his run at the European Formula 3000 race. We go to the driver debriefing for Formula 1 and a whole bunch more, including Power Tour news and a full look at the V8 at Barbagallo Raceway. Stay with us. This is Inside Motorsport.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Life can be cruel, not a lot you can do, but it helps if you've got a friend you can share with, comfort and care with. There's nothing quite like a friend, nothing quite like a friend.
For more than 70 years, Lorna has played the pipe organ for church and charity. Now she's been given something in return, the Order of Australia, and a delightfully affectionate Petzl's therapy companion dog called Ebony. Because of her frail condition, Lorna only occasionally plays the pipe organ these days, but still loves to play piano at home, usually to a highly appreciative audience of one, Ebony. You can help the Guide Dog Association train more Petzl's therapy companion dogs like Ebony by sending your donation today.
Nothing quite like a friend.
got a message?
Need to be heard.
Why not tell Canberra on Triple S FM? If you're a community group or non-profit organisation
with an upcoming event you'd like to promote,
contact the team at Triple S to air your community announcement.
Let us know 2 weeks in advance of your event by faxing us on 624-7066.
Or email us on sss@acttab.com.au.
Or just give us a call on 625-7248. 103.9 Triple S FM, working to support your community.
Inside Motorsport on Triple S FM. 8 years on, and it's still going strong.
They are struggling. They might just get Schumacher's car ready before they head off. Eddie Irvine's car is a struggle. Getting the second cars ready is going to be a real struggle, and the rumour is out that
the event this morning we had thousands of cyclists riding around the circuit. We've had hundreds of school children rehearsing for the opening ceremony, and the air and optimism and general support for the event is overwhelming.
It was fairly easy on the day stages, but I was leading up till that last stage before the mill break, and was concerned when Rick got back in front of us, so we decided that first night stage we'd give it a real try.
This is Webb Percy from the Coca-Cola Racing Team, and you're with Craig Howard on Thunder on Sunday.
Well, joining us now on Thunder, it is indeed with great pleasure. I welcome the winner of this year's Daytona 500, a two-time winner, in fact, Dale Jarrett. Thanks very much for joining us.
The first move, and that was going to be the key, is trying to block the first move, because once he made that, then he really didn't have much help from behind in getting a push. So I knew that if I blocked that first one, that I was going to be okay. And I just wanted to get off of the second
turn. The one accident that we're aware of that involved Parker Johnston. He was pole winner at last year's Marlboro 500, and he was seventh fastest in the rain-interrupted fraction.
You actually almost need to be an engineer just to run an oval, but I got a lot of experience there, and I think it's starting to carry over. We had a little problem at PIR, but I don't know now, that was...
They've done a great job getting it all here, but like in the next few weeks we'll get better and better. Good.
And that are you hoping you find a little bit more sponsorship to fill up those spare areas on the car?
Yeah, as I said a few months ago, we've been talking to three or four people, so then we still are, and Siegel was one of them, and they've come along
so
now.
There's a lot of talent in the young Jackson.
Yeah, it only really takes... You've got to give him credit. This is his first year in the sprint cars, and there's plenty of other guys that I know of that have been racing for a lot longer that haven't achieved as much.
Yeah, and whilst we're talking support races, Tiga on Wednesday was supposed to have their traction control test day. Now, what came out of that?
I'm not sure of the outcome finally. They play it pretty close to their chest.
Don't be fooled by the competition. For motorsport, it's Triple S FM.
Well, the European Formula One Grand Prix is on this afternoon, but yesterday it was the Formula 3000 race, which Canberra's Mark Webber started off the front row and finished second. Congratulations, Mark.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, it was a good day, really. Good weekend, actually. We struggled a little bit in the first qualifying session. We were down in sort of 7th and 8th position, and we actually made a good change to the car, and I actually started to drive the circuit slightly better as well in the second session. And we were on pole for a couple of minutes, and then Thomas Enger hit me by 400th of a second, so that put me back on the second on the grid. The top five guys, we were really close in qualifying, so the time was very, very tight, and it wasn't ideal starting on the dirty side of the circuit, and didn't make a fantastic getaway, but Thomas made an absolutely fantastic start, so it was very hard to keep the pace with him. It was his day today, really. I could just hang on to him, pushing on the limit, and I made a few mistakes, so he ended up winning quite comfortably in the end, but I'm happy with the championship because it's 6 points off Wilson again, so it's, even though I'm back to third now in the championship, I'm back to 5 points between everybody, so it's good.
Wilson, how did he go? Because he has been leading the championship for quite some time now.
Yeah, he had a non-finish today, which wasn't a bad thing for me, really. So he had his turn of bad luck. So he didn't finish the race at all today. So to get 6 points back on him was good. So he's on 31 points now. Anger is on 28, and I'm on 26 points. So it's fairly tight at the top.
And of course, all your sponsors over there, Yellow Pages, Foster's and the like, Qantas, all are going to be enjoying, well, this run home in the series now with, more than halfway through?
Yeah, we've still got six races to go, so there's still a long way to go. All the guys have been fantastic, obviously a lot of Foster's people here, and, it was a good weekend, and we can't win them all. It's just that first and the second and the last few races is not too bad. We just want to kick off Magny-Cours next weekend. We've got a race straight away, and then we've got a break before Silverstone. So it's actually quite a busy period for me at the moment. I'm after Magny-Cours. I'm spending 4 days in the Benetton at Barcelona, and then I'm going to the Goodwood Festival of Speed in England for Renault, and on the Sunday after that I'm going up to the motorbikes for 500cc Donington. So got a busy time coming up, but looking forward to it.
Sounds like a good life.
Yeah.
And with the Benetton, how are they going with the development on it? Because it seems remarkable that a team that was world champion only a few years ago is having such a bad run.
Yeah, well, Giancarlo didn't fare too badly today. I mean, 15th is not sensational, but it was a few tenths, and maybe he could have been had a look at 14th on the grid. And considering we're about 14 kilometres an hour down on the straight, down on not just power, but also aerodynamically efficient, the efficiency of the car, we're still trying to improve. So mechanically, the car's actually quite sound, because we saw Giancarlo drive very strongly in Monaco before hydraulic failure put him in the wall. But it's slowly but surely, mate, they're coming along. I think Renault have not underestimated, but they can't believe how much the engine development has moved on in the past sort of 3 years since they actually have sort of been out, really. So it'll come. They're making good improvements. Obviously, Michelin are doing a great job with Williams, and with all of us, but also you can't say the tyre's not a problem because Williams are winning races. So it's going to be an interesting race tomorrow.
Yeah, and I would imagine that every other man in his dog are waving a Shoemaker flag of one sort or the other.
Yeah, exactly. It's unbelievable. The atmosphere with Michael here is phenomenal. When he took pole today, the grandstand's just erupted. There was fireworks, and the atmosphere is just electric, And they've also got Ralph there on the front row, so it's an all-German affair on the front row tomorrow. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Well, Mark, have a good weekend, and we look forward to perhaps having a chat with you after Magny-Cours.
No problem. Hello to everybody there. No doubt a cold Queanbeyan and Canberra at the moment, but it's warming up over here in Europe. So, nice time over here at the moment. But I've had my fair share of cold days, so enjoy the winter.
All right, then. Well, thanks very much, Mark. The European Formula One Grand Prix is on tonight, and the Shoemaker brothers once again are on pole. Jonathan Ledyard is at the circuit and has this report.
Big Brother was at it again. It's becoming a habit wherever the pair go, and McLaren can't seem to break it. The Woking Wonders tried their best to cut a dash in top gear, but the gap to Brother Michael was more than 3/4 of a second. Brother Ralph was better by half. A new contract can have that effect. He was even quickest at one time, which leaves David Coulthard's championship challenge approaching a crossroads. Already 18 points down, and now 4 cars down on his rival. Coulthard blamed the balance of his car. His teammate Mika Häkkinen went even further, ruling out any overnight improvements and daring only to hope for a top-3 finish. Strangely, encouragement for the ranks of Mercedes executives in their spectacularly canopied grandstand came from the mouth of Michael Schumacher. Not for him, it appears, a victory guarantee after his 7th pole of the year. After he was hunted down and beaten by his brother 2 weeks ago, Schumacher has every reason to be wary of both Williams behind. Barrichello in 4th could have a crucial spoiling role to play. But for a couple of tenths, Eddie Irvine could have been 8th, not 12th, but the new Renault engine can't come soon enough for Jenson Button. 3rd slowest, more than a second down on his Benetton teammate Giancarlo Fisichella.
At the driver's debriefing, Michael Schumacher spoke about getting this record pole position in his home country and if it made it all the more special.
Yeah, certainly. In particular, the way it happened today, because I couldn't do the second session of this morning due to a hydraulic leak we had. And to sort the car out in the way they did. Team done a great job. So I'm obviously boosted up by that, by being home next to my brother. So that's great.
Now you've broken 1 minute 15. How much quicker would you have gone if you'd had the second session this morning?
You never know. Obviously the car was perfectly well prepared for qualifying. So from that point of view, not at all. But then you don't find out until you do.
Looking towards the race, you're in a similar situation to where in Canada with your brother and the Williams behind you. Are you worried that a similar thing will happen? He'll be able to follow you, and then because you've got either higher fuel consumption or a smaller tank, you have to go in earlier?
Not necessarily. Looking at the practice, how it was going, our tyres look very good here, very consistent. A little bit different to what I've seen with Williams and Ralph and Juan Pablo. So we will find out whether it changes until tomorrow. But so far, we should have the better tyre for this weekend. But we have thought that here and there before, and we both proved wrong. So let's find out.
Thanks, Michael. Ralph, many congratulations. Second place. But you came here this weekend not very confident about everything, how everything was going to go. But you've got the package working really well. How was that?
I mean, you know, the whole car works better than we all expected. But as Michael said, there is certainly in qualifying we were able to show up with the tyre we have, but it's not certain for the racing. I mean, there has to be higher temperatures for tomorrow and a bit more rub on the circuit, which might develop during the race, but I'm sure we're going to have a difficult race.
Now, you two guys have a bit of a history at that first corner. How are you going to approach it?
You know Fisichella is not with us.
So nothing should happen to us.
It's all down to Giancarlo now, is it?
I think that was the reason, yeah.
No, we approached it the same way we did Montreal. Worked out, didn't it?
Now, you mentioned, you touched on the fact that is it going to be very temperature specific of how well you do tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, as usual, you know, the warmer the Michelin, I think, and that's what we're waiting for tomorrow. We saw two practices we had this morning. I mean, one lap is always good for us, but then the performance seemed to drop up quite dramatically, and Bridgestone runners, they seem to be able to keep their performance. So it's going to be interesting.
That's right. My brother, congratulations, third place. Now, it's pretty obvious that these two guys are going to be very careful at the first corner. Is that a chance for you to get past both of them?
No, not really. You know, I think we had a pretty good qualifying. Wasn't the best of all. You know, we did a couple of changes at the end of the session for the car and didn't really pay off, but we had to try, you know. I'm very pleased, you know. You know, the car is working well. We had a pretty good day today, so, you know, try to get to the end tomorrow for a change.
Do you think your performance this weekend has taken off some of the pressure that's been applied to you recently because of a couple of non-finishes?
Not really, you know. Out of, like, 8 non-finishes, 2 of them have been my fault, so not really.
That's a problem. Michael, finally to you, are you surprised how Ferrari are very able to keep pace with this excellent performance of BMW? McLaren seems to be suffering so badly.
We have seen them often this year struggling in qualifying and then being competitive in race. So I wouldn't be surprised if they will be again competitive tomorrow because it seems to be a different issue for them. For us, it's pretty even. But I don't write them off until the end of the race, honestly.
The Power Tour was up at Queensland Raceway this weekend, and, well, joining us on the line, the media manager for the Power Tour is Paul French. And, Paul, another exciting round of trucks and VH stock cars up there in what was probably fairly good weather today.
Champion, we had such good weather today. I've got a rather good case of sunburn, actually.
Bit of truckies armour on a few of those drivers, I would imagine.
Oh, and a few sunburnt foreheads in the crowd, which was, like I say, was pretty substantial this year. We more than tripled our crowd from last year, which was a sensational performance out here at Queensland Raceway.
I would imagine that this track, whilst it is much maligned, for the trucks it would be spectacular because you've got good long straights and then they would have to do everything in their power to be able to pull up to get around some of the turns.
Yep, we ran what they call here the Clubman Circuit, which involves actually coming inside the track and into a dip. And in years gone by, we've been troubled actually with smoke in situations like that. But I can tell you now the trucks have made a big effort this year to clean up. And we've actually got a 3-year zero smoke policy with the trucks. And we're working very, very hard to clean up the sport. And I can tell you, today was a standout performance. The guys did really well. They've cleaned up their act a lot and they put in a lot of power-packed racing all day long.
Well, as truck racing normally goes, it's that New Zealander, Inky Tallack, that is most, more often than not, at the front of the field.
I've got to tell you, the question is going around now, what are you going to do to stop Inky Dulac? It is just an amazing machine. The cat-powered Freightliner has got so much torque and so much horsepower. The teams are just wondering what they're going to have to do to stop him. They certainly can't catch him. You know, in qualifying, I think we were looking at nearly a second and a half ahead. And in this sort of field, I can tell you, that is a significant gap.
Of course, he was debuting his brand new truck at this meeting.
Yeah, well, he actually turned it out at Oran Park last round. And they've made some refinements and some adjustments. Rodney Crick actually debuted his new twin-turboed Volvo at Queensland Raceway this weekend. And I can tell you, he didn't have anywhere near the fortune that Inky had down at Oran Park. But, the thing has not missed a beat. Now, to be honest, the team is surprised. The Cat team are a little surprised that the thing has just gone so well from scratch.
Yeah, it sounds like it was, just one of those performances where everyone's going to go back to the drawing board and go, more power, please.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you've got factory backing and you've got experts and you've got computers that plug into your machines, it makes all the difference, you know. And it's the direction the sport is heading, and we've just got to get a few more of these factory-backed teams online to make some of these guys a little bit more competitive. You know, we saw Daniel Bajima, who's been really, you know, struggling a bit this year, had a bit of support from some of the guys from the States, you know, got some new fuel curves plugged into his Cat engine, and, you know, he's up to 200 brake horsepower. And all of a sudden, he's gone from struggling at the back to pushing the guys up the front. And that's the sort of difference that factory backing can make.
Mm. Well, one of the great things about the Power Tour is it's not just a one-off race meeting. There is more than one star on the show. And, of course, the VH stock cars, after, tearing up the track at Oran Park last meeting, they're out to do it once again on what would be a very driver-friendly circuit for a VH stock car.
Well, the VH stock car guys, again, you know, they really have put in a huge performance here. We had a fair bit of carnage, actually, but the guys have worked tirelessly to keep the cars circulating out on the track all day. But once again, you know, Andrew Medighi has just risen to the top and has just powered his way through the field in several of the races today, just leaving the others in his wake. Even though Tony Southall, the Fireworks Kings, has just stormed them and put it on pole for his first time, there was just no stopping Andrew.
Sounds like it was a good run with George Elliott making a comeback to the series. Of course, the VH stock cars were formerly known as NASCAR.
Yeah, well, we're not allowed to call them NASCARs anymore, obviously, because we're not Americans. But, you know, the VH stock cars, they go hard, and they go hard all day long. We did have Tony Southall giving those guys a real hurry-up. Obviously, Tony being a local to Canberra, you'd know Tony pretty well. But, George was able to get up there and really give Andrew some curry this weekend, but Andrew's just holding him out.
Well, round number four of the Power Tour, where do you move to?
Okay, we're heading back down to Oran Park. It's 3 months away, so we've got a bit of time to prepare for that. We'll certainly be sending you some more information about that round when we get a little closer.
All right, Paul French, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you once again. And, of course, for those people who want to keep up with all the latest news in the Power Tour, you've got a great website there, which is www.powertour.com.au.
Yep, and you can also catch the Supertruck Racing at supertruckracing.com.au also. And they tell me that the VH stock cars site will be launching soon as well. And we'll fire you off some information about that when it hits the air.
Paul French, thanks once again for joining us here on Inside Motorsport.
Thank you. Remember, go hard. Or go home.
Colin McRae made it 3 wins from 3 starts. In America, they'd call it a three-peat. That was the success that McRae has been having over the last month, as Greg Strange was at the Acropolis Rally and has this report.
It's Colin McRae, and a month ago, before the Argentine Rally, he was down and out. What a comeback! 3 rallies in a row, his 4th win here in the Acropolis, his 23rd win in world rallying overall. That puts him equal in the all-time list of winners with Juha Kankkonen and Carlos Sainz. He's seen off challenges this morning, first from Richard Burns and then from Carlos Sainz, whose rally came to an end tragically some 10 kilometres into the final stage as the engine blew. And it means that McRae now moves to 30 points in the Drivers' Championship. Johnny, we think Tommy Mäkinen will finish 4th, which will mean they're tied for the lead in the Drivers' Championship. Poor old Carlos Sainz will move down to 3rd with 26, and Richard Burns will remain in 4th with 15. McRae, you know, is never unpredictable. This is a remarkable victory.
Yeah, it's been perfect. I mean, we couldn't have asked for any more. We had 4 rallies that we wanted a good result on, and, you know, at least 2 wins would have been good. We've had 3 wins out of 4 now, 1 more to go, so it's looking good.
A month ago, this would have been unbelievable.
a month ago it was really looking pretty bad for us and the championship was almost gone, so it's a big, big difference.
What's happened to change the luck?
Not so much luck. I mean, we were just having some mechanical problems. The guys have been working very hard back at Dovenbeen. You know, we've got the car, it's not 100% sorted out. I don't think anything ever is, but it's an awful lot better. And when things do go well and it's running reliably, then it's quite a difficult combination for everyone to beat, obviously.
You moved to the head of the championship table. You're tied on 30 points with Tommy Macklin. You also, incidentally, joined the all-time winners list. 23 World Rally wins, along with Carlos Sainz, a teammate, and Juha Kankinen. That's a pretty fine achievement, isn't it?
Yeah, it's to be up there with names like Carlos and Juha, who have been in the sport for so long, it's quite an achievement. So hopefully we'll be able to overtake them now.
Going into today's finals leg and the final stages, did you honestly believe that you could outrun these boys? They were very, very close to you, and the margin wasn't very good, was it?
No, it wasn't good. And they were pushing like hell. It was, and they were taking time as well. But we were reasonably confident that on the last stage we could hold Carlos off if we had to do it.
Now you go now to the Safari Rally, of course, next month in Kenya, one of the toughest rallies in the world. You've won it before. Four in a row?
It would be great, wouldn't it? We'll certainly be trying. Kenya's a place that seems to suit the focus, and certainly me, I enjoy it very much, and that's what we'll be going for.
You've got seven rounds left in the World Championship this year. I know it's a business of taking each rally as they come, but championship?
Certainly now, yeah. It looks very promising. We're certainly going well at the moment. We've got another good event for us coming up. Then after that, we'll see what the positions are, but it's certainly looking very good.
Well, the next rally coming up in a month's time is in Safari, the toughest really of them all, and he and Richard Burns have shared it between them for the last five or his last 6 years. He'd be, in this kind of form, could be devastating there. It really is possible that Colin McRae could win a second world championship this year. And after that dreadful year that he had last year, with a terrible crash, of course, in Corsica, he had a remarkable comeback just a fortnight later, his face held together with metal sutures and stitches, and competed and got a point in the San Remo rally. But, you know, for the next 10 months it was dreadful for him. Nothing went right, and then it suddenly all has.
The Indy Racing Northern Lights Series was at Pikes Peak International Raceway last weekend, and whilst Sam Hornish Jr., the current IRL points leader, looked like he was going to stink up the show and lap the field, it was in the end Buddy Lazier who got the victory. Mike King for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network was at the track and has this report.
Buddy Lazier is the winner, celebrating in victory lane. This is going to be a very popular win. Buddy thrusting the fist into the air. Mark James will be talking with him shortly. Sam Hornish Jr. winds up second here today as Sam continues to have an outstanding season. Sam with two firsts at Phoenix and Miami, a third-place finish at Texas last week, a fourth at Atlanta. Indianapolis's 14th-place finish was a disappointment. They have bounced back strong after not performing well at Indianapolis in the race. They have bounced back strong here with a third-place and a second-place finish back-to-back weeks at Texas and here at Pikes Peak.
Well, absolutely. You talked earlier about him, you know, proving to be on the podium. Well, let's not forget, he did win a race in IRL, and Buell comes from, you know, long history of laps in competitive cars, and he's definitely any kind of contender.
Let's go to victory lane. Mark James has Buddy
standing by with a winner, huge monkey off your back. You circled this one on the map. We talked on the calendar. We talked before the season started after what happened last year. This has to feel doubly good.
Oh, this is awesome. I mean, it's, home track. Obviously, Tybo, Coors Light, one of our big sponsors. This is our backyard, and this is my home. I just couldn't believe it. I didn't let myself believe it till the last lap. So, I don't know what to tell you. This team just keeps digging. You know, we've had some troubles, but we kept our heads down and just keep digging. And there's still a long season ahead, and I don't know what to tell you. I'm at a loss for words. This is we needed this bad. This is awesome.
This race indicative of this team because Sam looked like he was going to run off and hide, but you guys stayed pat with your plan.
We stayed tough, and you know it's a long race, and kept counting down the laps, and we had it when we needed it.
Congratulations, Buddy Lazier.
Thank you.
So Buddy Lazier celebrating in victory lane, and let's go downstairs. I think Kim Morris has caught up with second-place finisher Sam Hornish Jr.
I have, and he's taking a cool sip of water. Podium finish for you, but you dominated this race for the first, 152 laps or so?
Yeah, around there. We had an awesome car. The Pencil Panther guys did a great job as usual, and just got an offset of tires there on the last run, which hurt the car a little bit, made it loose, but had a close call once and just lucky to bring the car home.
You can say shoulda, coulda, woulda when it comes to that pit stop. You felt like you should have pitted at one point.
Yeah, I mean, we went out after that. There was a caution. I'm not quite sure what it was for, but you know, we were pretty close to lap in third place and real close to second. So. We put some tires on, and the car was real loose, and we hard time deciding what you need to do, because you either stay up in the front and take a chance, or you go to the back and try starting over again.
How's your testing been at Richmond?
Pretty good so far. We've got a good race car. We haven't been the fastest there, but we got a good race car set up so far, so we're happy about that.
Most laps led today. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Second place for Sam Hornish Jr.
Yeah, Sam Hornish Jr. easily with the most laps led today, Kim, as you said, with 152, I believe. We're checking that now. Buddy Lazier led 44 laps today. And, boy, JP, it's a difficult race for the Pennzoil Panther guys to pack up after and push that car, knowing that they had a first-place car for much of the day here. They just simply weren't able to hang on there in the final segment.
No, you know, like you said, had they gone green and they didn't have that yellow, he'd have been in great shape, because everybody would have pitted and he would have got what he wanted, what he felt he needed. And, gosh, after being dominant, it's tough not to win as good as the car was. But look again at the whole season. I mean, he was so dominant two races and won those races. And is this his second finish? He's got to be leading the points quite a bit.
Yeah, we're going to check the points momentarily. Ayrton Darre with a good finish today, a fifth-place finish. He was a couple of laps down when the checkers fell, but the top five is a top five after all. Let's go to Mark James.
I know that you wanted so desperately, first of all, to win, then to be on the podium. But with the struggles that you guys have had this year, have to be pretty happy with this fifth-place finish.
Yeah, that's okay for us. You know, if you look back on the weekend, we lost half of the session yesterday, the second session. We only got one lap for qualifying because we made the wrong changes and didn't have any warm-up this morning, so we didn't know how the car was going to react on the track, and I was real bad before the first pit stop. I got understeer all the way around, big push, and then we made some changes on the pit stop, and the car kept getting better and better.
So we're at the halfway point of the season, so there's still time to maybe get up there and try to make a race of it, but you got to have top five anyway the rest of the way.
Yeah, the basic thing, we have to start testing here. We didn't done too much testing for right now. And that's the only way we can learn how the car is going to react in the different conditions. And I think we're pretty much going to start to do that and try to turn around.
Nice run today. We'll see you at Richmond in a couple of weeks.
Thanks. See you there.
Ayrton Darre, a top five today.
Colorado's Buddy Lazier celebrating in front of his home fans. Here's the points heading to Richmond in just a couple of weeks. Sam Hornish Jr. continues to lead. In fact, the lead goes to 56 points now over Eliseo Salazar. Scott Sharp is third, but here comes Buddy Lazier, now fourth in points after the win. Felipe Giafone is fifth. Billy Boat, sixth in points. Jeff Ward is seventh. Buzz Calkins will go to Richmond, eighth. Greg Ray drops to ninth, and Ayrton Darre is 10th. Three yellow flags today for 23 laps, but thankfully no cars made contact with each other or the wall. Two lead changes among, we only had three leaders, two lead changes. It was Greg Ray leading the first four laps, the next 152 laps led by Sam Hornish, the final 44 laps led by Buddy Lazier.
Inky Tullock joins us on the line now, and once again, the competition brought some new trucks out to chase you, and, that's exactly what they did. They were following you all day, and once again, a dominant run for the Cat Racing team.
Yeah, we had a good run, pretty good run today. We had a few moments, got caught up in one of the races, and sort of coming from the back is pretty hard work and had a bit of damage, but no, all in all, managed to keep going and got through, which was, pretty happy about that.
The track at Queensland Raceway, how do you find it for the truck series?
Well, the track is wide. It's a very good quality. Spectators can see it all. It's very much a right-hand circuit, and there's not too much left and right or undulations, which in some ways can be a little bit of a downside because you can set your truck up just to go one way. But for all that, beautiful surface and a great place to race. Good facilities. Yeah, good.
With the truck series this year, you've been dominating quite successfully, and even Rodney Quick bringing out a new truck, hoping to stem the flow of Tullock wins, has not been the case.
No, not yet, but it's always hard to win with a new truck, and Rodney's had his share of problems. They had an engine rebuild last night, and I think it died today, late in the day, but it showed it's got potential, and we look forward to crossing swords with him at in the next meeting, which is, of course, at Oran Park, his home track. You know, I think he's been around that more times than I've been around my living room. So he might be a bit harder to beat there.
Inky, we were speaking to Paul French a bit earlier in the afternoon, and he was talking about how that you're cutting down the emissions from the trucks. How do you actually go about and do that?
Well, our truck has got a Caterpillar C12 truck engine, and it's all electronics, managed by electronics. And so it's not easy, actually. You've got to have access to a, from Caterpillar itself, the only ones who can actually alter our smoke, because it's done by programs out of the US. So we have some difficulty. If we're a bit smoky, we really need to go back to the States and ask them to reduce this and reduce that. The problem is when you take smoke out, you take power out. So it's always a trade-off, you know, just to get them down to the acceptable level.
Is there a possibility that you could run on anything but diesel?
At this point, no. No, certainly not. But who knows what the future will bring. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Could see green trucks racing in the future.
Yeah, I mean, in Europe, I mean, there's no smoke. But, of course, they use basically catalytic converters or soot filters. So, in actual fact, of course, the diesel engine puts out more power. To get a lot of power out of the engine, you have to put out a lot of soot. And in Europe, they have a zero smoke policy, and so they have these very expensive filters fitted, and of course, there's no smoke. But that is beyond the budgets of most teams in Australia at this time. But who knows? If we get a sponsor who would supply those to all the trucks, it will disappear overnight, and it will be really great for the sport.
It sounds like the fans don't mind the smoke, though, and they're out in numbers again today.
Sorry?
It sounds like the fans don't mind the smoke, and they're out there in numbers today.
Well, yes, there seemed to be a pretty good turnout there, certainly better than last year, and, of course, a fabulous day helps considerably. Yeah, but I think that, you know, a little bit of smoke's good, and about like anything, we've got to control that and make sure that there's enough there to make it, you know, so they can still feel not too much, they can't see the action, you know. But no, all in all, I think a great meeting, well run, good circuit, great climate. Yeah, what more could you ask for?
Well, Inky, we appreciate your time here at Inside Motorsport tonight, and we wish you all the best for the upcoming rounds when you make a return back to New South Wales for, of course, the next round of the Power Tour.
Thanks very much. Great to talk to you, and hopefully see you again next year.
And joining us on the line all the way from Western Australia is Andrew Clark, journalist for V8X magazine. How was the racing there today, Andrew?
Pretty straightforward, really. Tyres became a bit of an issue at the end of the day, and hard track to pass on. So, yeah, the rest just dominated.
Okay, and of course all the talk was about tyres. Was there anyone out there who really got the solution better than anyone else, do you think?
No, it doesn't seem like anybody really mastered it that well. I mean, Radisic obviously had the best package on the day, and I think, you know, he looked it, he had consistency, whereas everybody else seemed to jump around a little bit. So I suppose if anybody was there, it was him.
Yes, and we caught up to Paul Radisic just a few minutes ago, and we'll listen to that a little bit later in the show. But, of course, just behind the RAF was Mark Scaife from the Holden Racing team. How did his run go today?
It was good. He made a couple of changes between each races and got a little bit faster and a little bit more consistent. He had a bit of a scary moment, I suppose, in the first corner when he was hung out on the left-hand side of the track, but he managed to survive that and ended up just coming home in second.
Yes, yeah, so a fine effort there from Scaife, who really does go to prove that consistency is what championships are all about.
He's quite amazing, I think, Scaife, when you look at him. I mean, he's one of the quickest, if not the quickest guy in the field. Yet he's quite happy to just make sure that he bundles on the points. If he doesn't think he can win without taking a stupid risk, he just says, OK, I'm taking home second place, and he'll settle for it.
Yes, it's really about just consistently banking a whole heap of points from every round that you go to.
Yeah, he's always talking about that championship and saying, you know, if I did that, that would be silly because of the championship. So clearly his focus is there.
Yeah, that's right. Now, one guy who did quite well in race one and two was Russell Ingall, consistently in third place, but he's disappeared from race three. What happened to him?
I had a stop-go penalty for jumping the start, and that threw him down to about third or fourth last, I think. He only had Marcus Ambrose, who also had a stop-go penalty, and Larry Perkins, who spun off the track behind him.
Yes, so a pretty average race three there for the Castrol race team by the sounds of things.
Yeah, after showing so much promise early in the weekend too, it turned to disaster at the end of the day.
Yeah, I guess there's quite a contrast there. Scaife versus Ingall, consistency versus a bit of up and down. But anyway, one guy who is going quite consistently throughout the season in the Tom Walkinshaw Racing Team, the sister to the Holden Racing Team, is Greg Murphy.
He's been a surprise pack, I reckon. He's, for this weekend, he wasn't that fast. You know, he didn't look like he was going to challenge for the lead or anything. And then the next thing you know, the bloke's standing on the podium. Just where he came from, nobody really knows almost.
Yes, it's, this three-race sprint format sort of can pop people up like that if they make up positions throughout the race.
And yeah, Murph was quite clear. He said, you know, these races, you stay out of trouble and anything can happen. And as I say, that's what he did and that's what happened to him. So he was pretty happy, I think, at the end of the day. I don't think he expected third place at any point in time.
Yeah, and one other driver who took quite a few races to get up towards the pointy end of the field was Stephen Johnson, but he progressively made ground throughout the weekend.
Yeah, I think his performance this weekend was exceptional. I mean, we all talk about his victory in Canberra, but I think this will end up going down at rivaling that. He's been really sick for the last week. He's got a mystery virus that they haven't been able to cure. He says it's even hard to get out of bed. He's got no energy and he's got no strength. So to have fought his way from 15th spot to, I think it was 5th overall for the day. It might have been 4th or 5th overall for the day. It was pretty astounding. And he looked really, really exhausted when he got out of the car. But he would have overtaken more people than anybody else this weekend.
And I guess he's one of the top four drivers in the championship at the moment.
Yeah, he's fourth in the championship and he is the top four. He's about 350 points away from Scaife, so I suppose if we keep it in perspective, you know, he's at least an entire race weekend victory away from Scaife if Scaife fails to finish. And Russell Ingall has just moved in front of him in the points to take third spot. So, yeah, he is the top four, but he's a long way away.
Now, of course, one of the guys that we're expecting to be the top forward throughout the season is Craig Lowndes, and he was sort of consistent, but off the pace just that little bit.
Yeah, he said earlier on that they just didn't have the setup, and if you don't have the setup here, you end up sliding around a lot, which makes your tyres even worse. And, you know, I think it was just one of those days where they were nearly there, but not quite.
Now, I guess they were pretty disappointed because previously Craig had an unbeaten record there at Barbagallo Raceway.
Yeah, it's an astounding record when you think about it. I mean, he's won all 12 races in the last 3 years.
Oh, no, not too upset, unfortunately. We didn't get that 15 for 15, but, you know, we've got, again, good race data for next year, and that's really what this year's all about. But, we struggled a little bit at times, but, you know, we enjoyed the weekend.
It was interesting to see that just how much not having any data can really affect all the teams, and well, credit to Dick Johnson Racing, who managed to work with it the fastest.
Yeah, the rat, he did a fantastic job in the team. Yeah, you're right. He virtually had pole position and clean sweeped all three races. So they did a great job, and you know, that's something that again we're building on, and we're very happy with the end result. But unfortunately, we would have liked to start the weekend there. So you know, at the end of the day, you know, we're not too disappointed. We scored great points for the championship, and we're getting closer to the pointy end.
It has been a fairly interesting year for you so far. Now at round six, have you looked back at since like January when you announced that you are a Ford man now, and just gone, boy, this life is just moving so quickly now.
Definitely, this year has gone quick. It's amazing to think we're halfway through it already. It's been very surprising the way that some of the rounds we've been very excited with the car's performance and the way that we've worked with the team. So, you know, this first 6 months has gone better than expected. The next 6 months, hopefully, we'll just keep that sort of motivation and the momentum going. And you know, we're looking forward to Bathurst and the longer races come later in the year.
Have you had too many fans at this halfway point going, Craig, it's Ford, I can't, you know, I got this autograph tattooed on me right next to Peter Brox.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's a couple of gentlemen there that have been changing their autographs to dates, but no, it's been really positive. I think there's a lot of people out there that, although they may not like the Ford product, but they're still saying that, you know, they're wishing me all the best. And really, at the end of the day, we enjoy it. The fans are there. They're very supportive, and also they're very passionate about the sport, and that's where it's all coming from.
And one thing your fans have got to enjoy over the last two meetings, and it's going to continue on from there, is your brand new website and also the Gibson Motorsport website, which is trying to give them as much information as they can possibly digest.
Well, definitely. It's something new for us this year. We've been able to get it up and running now, and I'm not sure, but we're having live feed updates every, I think, 20 minutes or half an hour right through the weekend. So if people log on to it, they can see what the racing results are or what practice results are.
Well, we haven't given the web address, so I'll let you do the gratuitous plug.
It's www.gibson... Oh, hang on. I've been re-instructed. It's www.gibsonmotorsport.au.
Hey, and like a good racing driver, as soon as a crew chief or someone more important feeds you the lines, you're just doing as ordered.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, that's, I haven't logged on to them as yet.
All right, then. Well, Craig, all the best and have a safe trip home.
Thank you very much.
I think he would be a bit disappointed, but, you know, he said earlier on today as well, he's focused on the championship. He doesn't think it's all over, even though he's quite a few points away.
Yes, that's interesting. When we spoke to Paul Radicic, he indicated that he acknowledges that the championship is out of his grasp for the year, but he's going to be in there battling away anyway.
I think for the Rad, it probably is all over. I think there's, probably any one of the top four guys now has a realistic chance. But, it's going to rely on Scaife and Bright driving together at Bathurst but not finishing, I think.
Yes, I tend to agree with that. One guy from the Kmart Racing team who I think has been a bit of a surprise packet for this season is young Todd Kelly. We're expecting him to make a few rookie mistakes throughout his first year there with the top-notch team, but he's consistently putting in good results.
Yeah, I reckon the Toddler's been great this year. The first three races, I think it was, he was in the top three or four qualifying at each race. He's finished well, he's done well, I think he's done 20 starts now in the championship. And, he hasn't made the mistake that we all expected. So I think he's been very, very impressive, and he's going to be a guy to watch in the future.
Yes, absolutely. And second in the points is still Jason Bright, but he's had a sort of average weekend.
Yeah, I think the expression there is he had a complete shocker. At no point in time, except perhaps for a few minutes this morning, did he even look like he had a proper race car with him. He says they're just struggling. They built a new car for him after Adelaide, which is the race meeting that he won, and they just can't get the thing to work properly. It's hard to tune. It's a bit temperamental. It's not at all like his old car or like Scaife's new car.
At the end of the day, we're still accumulating pretty good points, and we've just got to keep them.
And another guy who's had a pretty tough year so far is Garth Tander. He's had a fairly tough weekend, but put in a decent result in that third race.
Yeah, he did well in the third race, but up until then, he was really, really, really struggling, as was his teammate Jason Barguana. But, interestingly, this is Tander's home track, and there's big Garth Tander banners everywhere, and up a couple of spots, the crowd would stand up and cheer. So I think that would make the experience here for him even more bitter.
Yes, disappointing trip. It's an awful long trip home if you've had a pretty ordinary weekend. And I guess one of those guys who will be rather miserable on the long flight home would be Glenn Seaton.
Yes, Glenn would be a bit grumpy, I would think. He had an incident with Lowndes in the second race today, and probably regrets the fact that he had a bad start yesterday. He's probably the only guy, I think, if he hadn't had that bad first race yesterday, could have challenged Radicic this weekend. But, that's life. He had a bad start, he dropped to fourth, got himself in the middle of stuff, got hit by Lowndes this morning, and then today dropped a cylinder in the final race, so didn't even finish that. So, I don't think he'd be very happy at all.
Well, I'm looking forward to some mischievous person on the ticket counter to doing the seat allocations on the flight, putting Lowndes and Seaton together. That could be a long flight.
It'd be very interesting, wouldn't it? I think they'd have a few things to say to each other. Lowndes is, makes no apologies. He says he's a racer, he's a hard racer. He's not going to give ground to anybody. And if you want to pass Craig Lowndes, you're going to have to make sure that you're good. Because, he's certainly one of the best we've got and best we've ever seen. So, he's just not going to give ground easily to anybody.
Okay. And were there any other notable performances a little bit further back in the pack?
No, I was very impressed with Tony Longhurst this weekend. I think he's found a bit of that edge that he might have lost the last couple of years. Tony was always one of the quickest guys in anything. I can remember once watching him do a lap at Bathurst where he was the first guy not to lift off going into Caltech's chase. And that was just amazing. Everybody in pit lane just stood there gobsmacked as this bloke did that. And, so today, I think he did a really good job. He was overtook about 9 cars, I think, in yesterday's race, and did well again today, passed a few cars. He didn't hit his former teammate, David Besnard, which had a few people smiling. And, yeah, I think he did very, very well.
Yep, fantastic.
And the one who impressed me was Jason Richards in the Team Kiwi car. I think he finished 14th in that third race, and they haven't had much track time this year, the Team Kiwi boys, so I think they'd be very, very pleased with that effort.
Yes, very well done to them. Of course, they had struggled to qualify for some of the rounds, so it's good to see them finally getting a good result for them.
Yeah, I just think it shows, you know, if you get out on the track and you get the laps in, you can actually get your car working properly. And that's the story from, you know, the Pertec racing guys, Marcus Ambrose. You know, he had a shocker yesterday when they had to change an engine and essentially lost 2 sessions, and they just never, ever got the setup right. They struggled all weekend. So if you get some laps in, you can actually get the things working properly.
Yep, and Marcus Ambrose, his teammate, you mentioned David Besnard, who's normally tangling with Longhurst. This too, he finished well back.
Yeah, he's not overly happy with the way with the results this weekend, but he's very happy with the progress that they've made. You know, the fact that he stayed out of trouble largely. You know, he hasn't been involved in crashes and he hasn't been involved in any shunts this weekend. He had a brake problem this morning, which sent him into the sand trap in the warm up. And yeah, but you know, as I said he's happy. He thinks they've made some progress. He said the cars, neither his nor Ambrose, were working this weekend. So he said it's the first time that, you know, he and Ambrose have been about the same kind of speed. So he's pleased.
And another driver who had an ordinary time in qualifying, having a bit of a tangle and a bit of work to do overnight, was Steve Ellery. And he seemed to have things a little bit better back on track during race two.
Yes, he did. He was involved in that incident yesterday morning with Cam McConville, for which McConville scored a $2,000. But yeah, he's you know, he's one of those guys who's just about there. You can't wonder if you throw a bit more money at somebody like that whether they can make that final step. Given that they're, you know, probably a low budget front runner, their efforts are always very impressive. So I suppose that is the same with Cam McConville. He got his 10th outright today, which is quite astounding given the team and the size of team that he's running in.
Yes, and one driver that always seems to be in the wars no matter where he goes is Mark Larkham, and it's the same again.
Poor old Lark. We just sat there and watched him as the wheel fell off his car on the warm-up lap in the third race, and you just say, like, if that's going to happen to anybody, it's going to happen to Larko. He's one of the nicest guys you will ever meet, but geez, you know, what did he do in a previous lifetime?
Yes, you can almost say it's a sure bet that he's going to have problems along the way, although we must give him credit. He has had some good runs at Bathurst and a few of the long-distance races.
He's a remarkably good driver as well, you know, and that's why it must be so frustrating. He never gets it, or he doesn't often get a chance to really show his talents or the talents of his team. If somebody's going to have a crash and crash into you, then they're invariably going to hit either Mark Larkham or John Faulkner. You know, if something stupid's going to happen, like a wheel falls off at a warm-up lap, then it's going to happen to Mark Larkham. You know, it just must be such a frustrating thing for him.
Let's give a credit that at Eastern Creek, Glenn Seaton also had a bit of a problem on a warm-up lap.
Yes.
So Larkham doesn't have a monopoly on bad luck.
No, he doesn't, but he sure has a fair percentage of it.
Yeah, that's right. Now, of course, if people want some more in-depth details and results, they can get it on the web. Whereabouts is that?
It's at www.v8x.com.au, and we've loaded all of our stories and information from the day, so go in and have a look.
Fantastic. And, of course, V8X magazine, we've got a new issue about to hit the newsstands.
Yes, I believe that they've all been printed and they're sitting there now ready to go out this week. So hopefully by the middle of the week you'll be able to get it in your newsagent, and I'm hoping to get a copy before I go away on holidays on Tuesday.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that issue. It will allow us to get into the head of Russell Ingall and find out what's going on in there. So that should make some fascinating reading.
Yeah, the Russell Ingall stuff should be interesting. There's also an interesting story on Ford with Howard Marson. So find out a little bit about what's driving and motivating Ford to get so serious about it this year.
Yes, fantastic.
Howard Marson himself is a pretty happy boy this weekend. But he doesn't care who wins so long as it's a Ford.
Yes, and I guess that's 3 rounds in a row that they've taken the points, but he's the first outright domination of a round that we've had from Ford for many years. So congratulations to all the boys there at Ford.
Yep, it's actually the first time since 1995 that Ford have won three rounds in a row. And that was with two wins to Glenn Seaton and one win to John Bow. So they'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, it's a long time between drinks for the Ford fans.
Yeah.
Okay, Andrew Clark, thank you very much for bringing us up to date. And look forward to catching up to you from other rounds of the V8 series.
No worries, I'll talk to you later. Bye.
And congratulations goes to Paul Radicic on an outstanding victory over there in Western Australia this weekend.
Yes, thank you very much. We've had a terrific weekend from pole position and winning all three races. Just fantastic from my point of view as well as the Vic Johnson team. It's been a real team effort and we've come off on top.
And how much does this mean to you personally after having quite an up and down year so far?
Yeah, it has been up and down, and we've had the pace. We've just had a lot of silly little things happen, and that's the way it goes in motor racing. But we've got it all together this weekend, and let's hope we can continue on with that.
Have you left your run a little bit too late for the championship, or do you think there's still a chance?
Well, I can't really leave it trying all the way through, but as far as the championship goes, yes, I think we're out of it, and we'll just keep going on trying to win as many races as possible.
And of course you'll be in there trying to win the big one in October, of course.
Absolutely.
Now, most of the talk over the weekend was of tyres and the abrasive circuit there at Barbagallo Raceway. Did you have any hiccups along the way?
Well, as far as tyre wear goes, it's the same for everybody. It's just, I guess, our car was a little kinder on the tyres and I was able to make, three good starts and keep the lead, and it makes a big difference from leading from the front. I think the only problem we had was in the third race, we started to have some fade problems, which like a rear master cylinder was leaking and causing a few fate-hunted moments. But other than that, everything was great.
Would you regard this as one of your easier victories? That many times looked like you were cruising out in front.
Oh, none of them are easy. And just keep the car going in a straight line and keeping the tyres on the car and keeping them in good condition is... believe me, it may have looked easy, but it was something you have to keep mindful of all the time. And, we're very pleased to have won them, particularly the first two in such large margins. But, the third race, we were going just to keep Scotty behind.
Okay, so really, instead of concentrating on the cars around you, your concentration was more focused on keeping it smooth and saving those tyres.
I'm just trying to worry about the cars around and behind and just drove my own race, and it paid off this weekend.
Well, thanks very much, Paul Radicic, and we look forward to seeing the Rat in action again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you very much.
In the wonderful world of NASCAR racing, last weekend they were racing at Pocono International Raceway, where it was Ricky Rudd, and he figured that because he was winning the race, something bad was bound to happen. And with Jeff Gordon closing in at the end of Sunday's race, the script seemed perfect for another defeat. But Rudd outlasted Gordon, and he had enough fuel to finish and broke an 88 race drought. Now, Ricky Rudd didn't have it all clean sailing. He had a few niggling problems towards the end, and this is what he had to say after the race.
With about 12, 15 laps to go, I went to go into turn one. I went to downshift into third gear, and it wasn't a third gear there. I couldn't find it. Everything was grinding. The box was, I don't know if the gearbox tore up or what happened, but you always hear about everything, making all those noises late in the race. But I truly had a problem. I finally did find third gear, and I left it in there. I went about to shift it again and really turned a lot of RPM late in the race. And we're lucky everything held together, but we had a close call. Matter of fact, when we finished the race, I haven't won. It's so long since I won, and they started the burnout deal at start-finish line. So I was so excited I was going to do a burnout. Went to put it in first gear, and there was no gear there in first gear. So I had to try to do a second gear burnout, so I didn't do too good a job on that.
It was Rudd's first victory in nearly 1.5 seasons since selling his own team to drive for the Robert Yates Racing Team. It was the first win in 4 years for the number 28 car, which has been a long favourite of NASCAR fans because many Hall of Famer drivers have driven it. Finishing second was Jeff Gordon, who passed Rudd on the last lap a week earlier in Brooklyn, Michigan, to win for the second time in a row. But it was Rudd who got his 21st career victory. The 44-year-old driver now has won for 6 different car owners, and that's only bettered by Bobby Allison, who won Winston Cup races for 7 different teams. It was the first victory for Rudd in 44 starts at Pocono International Raceway, where he has competed since 1977. And he is now third in the series standings after 15 of the 36 races this year, and he is trailing the points leader, Jeff Gordon, by 130 points.
Rudd's Ford led 39 of the 200 laps on the two-mile triangular-shaped oval to beat the Chevrolet of Gordon by 1.1 seconds. Third was Rudd's teammate Dale Jarrett, followed by Sterling Marlin in a Dodge and Mark Martin in a Ford. Now, Jeff Gordon, who at one point traded the lead with Jarrett on five straight laps, was sprinting away from the field as other competitors began pitting under green. But caution was waved on lap 121, permitting the field to bunch up behind him. Gordon pitted on lap 122 as the rest of the field stayed out, and he was shuffled back into the field. A yellow flag on lap 158 forced the final pit stops and cut into Jarrett's leads. Jarrett led Rudd and then Gordon when the green was waved again with 37 laps left to run, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. Was just in front trying to stay on the lead lap. But it was Rudd who passed Jarrett and Earnhardt on lap 177. Then Gordon got by Earnhardt and the threesome raced together until the end. Gordon passed Jarrett on lap 194 and now leads Jarrett in the points by 36. Defending Pocono champion Jeremy Mayfield was part of a multi-car accident early in the race and he went on to finish 36th. His teammate Rusty Wallace, who won last July, was 16th. So let's recap that top 10. That was Ricky Rudd from Jeff Gordon from Dale Jarrett in third, who had this to say shortly after the race.
It was a good day and we're awful happy for Ricky and everybody on the Texaco Haviland team. They did a great job. They've been so close for so long, we knew it was going to happen eventually, but they ran great all weekend. They helped us a lot to be competitive today. So it was a good day for Robert Yates Racing all the way around. Certainly we would like to have won, but we'll take a third. Was hoping I could hold Jeff off there where I didn't lose any points. I knew he had led the most laps, and I was hoping that we could kind of break even. Just didn't quite make it happen.
And in fourth, it was Sterling Marlin in a Dodge from Mark Martin in a Ford. In sixth was Matt Kenseth from Tony Stewart, Bobby Labonte, and Ken Schrader, followed by Jeff Burton rounding out that top ten. And NASCAR are racing this weekend over in California, where it's actually a road circuit, one of only two road circuits they race on throughout the year. And as part of our regular program of bringing you race previews from NASCAR, we will cross to the PRN radio network for their usually entertaining segment, which includes, of course, those rather entertaining American ads.
Gordon goes for four in a row as they get sassy here at Sears Point.
Go as fast as you can and stay on the road, and sometimes that's easier said than done.
I'm Mark Garrow.
PRN's Garage Pass, brought to you by Team Monte Carlo. Chevy, the cars more champions depend on. 11,987 patches of rubber.
And Team Monte Carlo captured Talladega.
481 checkered flags.
Match number 50 for Gordon.
17 Manufacturers' Championships. One team, Team Monte Carlo. The team with the winningest car in NASCAR Winston Cup history.
Woo! They're going to be tough to beat.
Monte Carlo, the cars more champions depend on. Chevy, we'll be there.
Ricky Craven, I guess when you hit that brake pedal, you've got to have a lot of faith in those brake pads.
You've got to be able to race with authority and know that everything underneath you is the very best. And with performance friction, it's never a question.
What about the brakes on your family car?
My wife says they're quieter. And if they're quieter, then it's peace of mind. And my children are more important to me than any one of those 15 race cars I have.
Performance Friction Carbon Metallic. Available at AutoZone.
At one point on the Winston Cup Series, Rusty Wallace, Ricky Rudd, and Mark Martin were considered the top road racers. Well, now the title belongs to Jeff Gordon, who has won six of the last seven road course races and is going for his fourth straight win here at Sears Point in Sunday's Dodge St. Mark 350.
I never pictured myself in this position. I always liked the road courses, but I never dreamed that I would be a guy that would be able to be that dominant on the road courses.
In the pre-qualifying practice, Gordon was the quickest at 93.976 miles per hour. He was followed by Rusty Wallace, Ron Fellows, Tony Stewart, and Robbie Gordon. There was one incident during the session. Ron Hornaday crashed in the horseshoe, and the AJ Foyt team had to go to a backup. Now, there are seven road course ringers trying to make this race, with five regular Winston Cup drivers being filled in for by these specialists, among them Ron Fellows and Scott Pruitt, who ran the Winston Cup circuit full-time last season. They just teamed up together to take a Corvette to victory in last week's prestigious 24 Hours of Le Mans. Dave Blaney's car chief, Tom Hubert, and a guy who's done a lot of road racing, will qualify Buckshot Jones's car, with Jones getting back in for the race. Hoping to stir up a little more action, the part of this 11-turn course known as the Chute has been reconfigured for the second time to create another potential passing zone. Rusty Wallace isn't sure they've succeeded or not.
You're really running fast going in and running fast going in another corner.
And whether we can get enough time to get in the inside of a guy and make a pass, I don't know. We'll just have to get in the race and see. I think there's going to be some passing. I really do.
And before the pit stop, starting at Daytona, NASCAR is mandating larger driver's side window openings, allowing those wearing neck restraints to get out faster.
If you're one of the many Americans who can't get credit, you can now earn a major bank card. We guarantee you a Credit Plus card with a $2,500 line of credit so you can catalog shop from your home. This program lets you establish or rebuild your credit and earn a major bank card. Call 1-800-270-6093. If you're over 18 and have a valid bank account, you qualify. There's no security deposit, no credit check. So call for your $2,500 credit card today. 1-800-270-6093. That's 1-800-270-6093.
Turning left and right here at Sears Point, this is Johnny Andretti, and you're listening to PRN's Garage Pass.
For three consecutive years, Jeff Gordon has been the champion at Sears Point. 1998.
Jeff Gordon started first and he will finish first.
1999.
Jeff Gordon gives himself a get well card.
And in 2000.
Gordon captures the checkered flag.
Will Jeff Gordon do it again? Or is there a new champion waiting in the wings? It's the Dodge Save Mart 350 at Sears Point Raceway, Sunday, June 24th, beginning at 2:45 Eastern, here on the Performance Racing Network.
As to what the drivers are going to be chasing here at Sears Point this weekend in the first of two road races in 2001, listen up and listen quick.
Hills and curves and ups and downs and hops and bumps and jumps and everything else.
You know, you're going to swing it one way, then you swing it the other.
The main thing with Sears Point is staying on track.
You're constantly thinking about the next corner.
You can drop a wheel, you can hit a curve.
If you hang a tire off, you're going to either loop it around or end up in the kitty litter. I'm glad it's only twice a year.
Join yours truly and the PRN gang for live coverage of the Dodge Save Mart 350 beginning Sunday afternoon at 2:45 Eastern. And that's it for now. I'm Mark Garrow.
PRN's Garage Pass brought to you by Performance Friction. Virtually everyone in racing uses Performance Friction brakes. And by Crystal Clear at 1-800-270-6093.
Thanks very much to the PRN team for that report. Look, as we have to wrap it up here now very soon on Inside Motorsport, I thought we would just let you know of a few other events just by way of bookkeeping here. Last weekend we had the Le Mans 24-hour race, which was won by Emanuele Pirro, Frank Bieler and Tommy Christian in their Audi Sport Team Jost R8 Audi, 321 laps of the circuit were completed by the Jost team. Now, they were only one lap ahead of their teammate, the North American Audi Sport team of Dindo Capello, Laurent Aiello, and the newcomer, Cristiano Pescatore. Then, in third position, my car, the Bentley, the EXP Speed 8, of course, the enclosed car. Now, the enclosed car rules don't suit Le Mans specs quite as well as the open cockpit prototype. So the Bentley, 12 laps down after they had to replace, a bunch of their transmission electronics was the reason behind their dramas. Now, an interesting race, and congratulations to all the teams involved there. Of course, for the Australians, the Panos was being driven by, of course, David Brabham. It had troubles early in the race, and that was all she wrote for that effort. So, unfortunately for the Australians, the opportunity of picking up another Le Mans 24-hour win was not to be. And, of course, in the GT3s, the Porsches of Gabriel Rosa, Fabio Babini and Luca Druid were the winners there. 283 laps completed. Then, as you heard in the PRN Garage Pass, that Ron Fellows, Johnny O'Connell and Scott Pruitt were the first of the Corvette Chevrolets in the GTS class. The Peugeot, the Courage Peugeot C60 was the first of the C60s, and the first of the LMPs was the North Star Cadillac with Wayne Taylor, Max Angelini and Christian Tinsu. So that's about where the Le Mans 24-hour race of 2001, held in atrocious conditions when it started out, and just quite frankly, I think most of the drivers would have preferred to see a delay in the 24-hour start because of how heavy the weather was. Well, finally tonight to our last interview of the evening, and by no means the least, Tony Southwell, a V8 stock car driver from here in the ACT, was up there at the Queensland Raceway, as you heard from Paul French's report, and, well, you had a good run out there today.
We were on pole. We came second in the first race, fourth in the second race, and first in the last race, and we came second overall for the day.
Fantastic news, and probably pulling off your first pole position was also pretty thrilling.
Mate, that was excellent. That was really, we worked so hard to get the car to do what we wanted to do, and we did 5 laps in the qualifying section. I knew that I wasn't going to go any quicker than what I did on my second lap, so we pulled up, and Andrew Radecki threw everything at us. He came in and changed tyres, then changed and set up stuff, and really tried to get us, but he couldn't do it.
Radecki was just stunning at Oran Park. Obviously, up at Queensland Raceway, where the cars would have been fairly evenly matched, it was, well, just a real battle in, well, straight-line speed.
Yeah, no, it was good. We came second behind Andrew in the last race at Oran Park, which was good. It's good to have Andrew along with us guys, because most of us guys are speedway drivers, and he lifts us up another level. It's good to have someone there that has the experience and makes us all drive that much better.
Knows how to turn right.
Yeah, he does, and he's very helpful, and if we're all racing against each other, it wouldn't go any quicker. So having Andrew there makes us all drive that much harder.
How do you find the Queensland Raceway circuit? Because it would certainly more suit these cars than, say, going out to Wakefield Park.
It was really good. They wanted us to run on the long track when we first got there, but I sort of started a push to have us on the short track to try and bring us close to the crowd. The surface there is really nice, and the track layout of the facilities was really good. We had a ball. We really enjoyed our weekend.
It really wouldn't take too much for them to turn that into an oval, would it?
No, there's actually been a little bit of talk about down the far end of it linking the two straights together and making like a mini flat Indy type track for us to run on if we get enough cars.
Mm. The V8 stock cars, of course, were formerly known as NASCARs. How has it been in this transition period to really get people focused in on what you're trying to do in the series?
Well, it's been surprisingly easy. When it all started, we were sort of starting with nothing after leaving what we were doing before at the Thunderdome. So I thought it was going to be difficult, but the crowds we're getting and the media we're getting and the support we're getting is excellent. I mean, I've been racing NASCARs for 12 years. Last week was the first time the Canberra Times ever contacted me, and this is the first time I've ever spoken to you guys, so it's going really well.
The Power Tour package does mean that you get the truck fans, you get the fellas that want to see stock car racing all coming together, and it is a good way to promote two series that on their own probably wouldn't be able to draw the attention.
The guys who are running the Power Tour are really doing a great job. Nick Ebbick is the CEO. He's put together a deal for all of us guys, and the promotion we're getting, it's great. I can't speak highly enough of what they're trying to do, and I think we're going to go from strength to strength.
Well, you're back onto almost local soil for the next round at Oran Park. What do you have to do to change the car over for the slightly more open circuit at Queensland Raceway to going back to Oran Park again?
Basically, it's just a final drive gear change. Most of the car we can leave the same. If we had, it's easy to speak in hindsight, but because we've changed to these new Hoosier tyres, which are a biased fly tyre, it's a whole setup change. If we had have had the setup change in our car for Oran Park, I don't think Andrew would have got me at the last one at Oran Park either. So when we go to Oran Park, now that we've got our car as good as we could probably get it, with a gear ratio change, I think we'll be fast there too. I think it'll be Andrew and myself, George Elliott, Mark Harrison will be the fast cars.
It's interesting to see that you are plugging away, and of course with that great sponsorship on the car, and the car does look a treat, the Fireworks King.
Yeah, it is. The Fireworks King sponsorship, without that we couldn't go anywhere. And the car does look great, and we're getting a lot of support from people, and people like it, and we're having a whole bunch of fun. This racing on the flat tracks is all the drivers who have been doing the NASCAR thing on the oval and that for so long. We're really enjoying it. We We do want to get back onto the fun zone when politics allows, but at the moment we're happy to do what we're doing, and we're really enjoying it.
Well, congratulations, second place today, and we look forward to keeping in touch with you and all the Power Tour guys as we get set for a big race, which will be the return leg at Oran Park.
Yeah, it's in 10 weeks' time, and I'm really looking forward to it. And thanks very much, Craig, for giving me a call.
Tony Southwell joining us on the line there, and congratulations to him and the Fireworks King team for their success this weekend. Well, that's all we've got time for this week on Inside Motorsport. I'm glad you stayed with us, and don't forget, we'll have a big show next weekend here on the Good Sports Triple SFM.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.